Hello and welcome to The Inside Dish on Lehigh Valley Art Salon, where we explore the culinary arts in and around the greater Lehigh Valley. I'm Mike Drabenstadt, your host for our gastronomic tour of our region's amazing food scene. I'm here with Sarah Troxell, who with her husband Galen, owns Galen Glen Winery in Andries. Did I say that right?
You did.
Okay, that's about 15 miles northwest of Allentown, right in the north side of the Blue Mountain Ridge.
Yep, we are All right, just north.
Sarah, welcome to The Inside Dish.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So unlike a lot of the newer vineyards that are popping up, I know your property's been farmed for more than 200 years, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
What can you tell us about the history of the land there?
So originally, the land was owned by one family, mm-hmm. and the father had two sons. So he divided the farm between the two sons. And if you've seen our property, it's hills and rolling valleys and lots of terrain that moves. And so the idea was not to give the flat to all one son. So it's kind of like a quilt. We have a piece, the neighbors have a piece, we have another piece. So it's this quilt of rolling hills and valleys that has become our farm.
And is there much of a difference in the soil and climate north of the Blue Mountain Ridge compared to the southern areas where a lot of the other Lehigh Valley wineries are?
There sure is, because we are the edge of the glacial push. So those are the glaciers that began way north, carved, for example, the Finger Lakes, and then they end at the Blue Mountains. So those soils are glacially deposited, as opposed to south of the mountain, which is not. And another interesting fact, before the glaciers, about 300 to 400 million years ago, Pennsylvania was a sea. So we have sea fossils all over our vineyard. There's one area that's very concentrated, and we've named that vineyard the Fossil Vineyard. Those fossils are called crinoids, and they're sea creatures that are in the neighborhood of 300 to 400 million years old.
Wow.
Super cool.
Well, I started talking about 200 years old of the land, but it's been there a lot longer, of course.
Well, Pennsylvania has been around for a long time.
So how do those qualities in the soil then express in the grapes and the wine that you produce at Galen Glen?
So many things go into creating a wine. Soil is a big component. Microclimate, that's our little shape and terrain of our land, and also the weather. So the soil is where the grapes begin, and then the microclimate is what they, and weather is what they have to thrive and grow in. And we have a very dry microclimate. Because of our location, the rain will split. It'll go to our north and south, making us dry. We've also got the elevation from those hills. That combination with the soil is what creates beautiful wine.
And is there a difference? I know a lot of the Lehigh Valley wineries grow a lot of the same grapes and make the same wines, you know, Rieslings, Chambresin, Vidal Blanc. What differences would there be in your wines compared to some of the other ones, not just because of where you are, but in terms of how you make the wines?
So I like to say we farm wine. So our wines begin in the vineyard, but also our style is aromatic, meaning I'm looking for as much aroma and just when you smell our wine, something that's very memorable from our location. So enhancing the qualities that come from the vineyard into a beautiful, powerful aroma. So we're most known for aromatic white wines, but we also offer some red wines as well.
And which of those white wines would you be best known for?
So Riesling, mm-hmm. Grüner Veltliner, and then the tricky one to say, Gewürztraminer. So those three are probably our most famous of the aromatic whites. Then we grow some Cabernet Franc, a little Merlot, very little, because that's winter sensitive, and also some Chambresin.
And you've been with the winery and had that for 23 years now, right?
Yes, we have. That we're starting our 23rd year.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Tell me about how the winery has evolved over that time.
So in the beginning, it was just a few acres. We're now at almost 20 acres. In the beginning, I was a chemist working in the pharmaceutical industry, my husband an engineer. So after quite a few years, we finally left both those careers and transitioned to full-time at the winery. And I think that's when we were able to become extremely focused on wine growing and winemaking. It's very hard to wine growing and wine making is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We talk about wine. We drink wine. It's wine. We go on vacation for wine. We go to restaurants for wine. We like food with wine. We like to enjoy cooking with wine. I mean, everything
wine.
Yeah. So it's all we do all the time. It's all we think about. It's actually very serious for us. So it's become our culture.
Well, I imagine there are qualities in your respective personalities, being an engineer and a chemist, that are well suited to winemaking. But there's also maybe an artisan or a less scientific side that needs to be brought as well. Talk a little bit about your personalities and your backgrounds and how that might affect what you do.
So my husband's an engineer, can design, weld, build, create pretty much anything I imagine, and sometimes things I don't imagine, because he's just, that's what he likes to do. But before he was an engineer, he grew up on our farm. So as a young boy, he held loppers, pruners, operated equipment. So not only can he think and run a business as an engineer, but he also has the capability to grow things. And it's a natural talent. I like to say my work in the vineyard came to me the hard way, meaning I got yelled at. Whereas he's, you know, held loppers, pruners, equipment his whole life. So he's really a wizard at putting the kind of the almost a natural intuition for growing into a mechanical aspect as well, because we have some mechanization to help us. We do a lot of hand labor, but we also are mechanized. So he brings that side of it. And then I worked as a pharmaceutical chemist. So I did liquid drug packaging for clients around the world, for all of the big clients. Highly stressful, but wine is a liquid. So from one liquid to another liquid. I don't have an enology background. I kind of wish I did. But I do have a mentor, and he's from Europe. So I can talk with him online, or I can actually, I see him at least once a year. And he comes to not only teach me maybe some new lab techniques, but also expand my horizon, remind me of what wines are like in Europe, which is kind of the benchmark for the wines that we create. Kind of keeps me abreast of the style of winemaking from a worldwide perspective.
So it's been 23 years of on-the-job training for you.
It has been. I wish I had a little more classical training, but I've supplemented that with, there's other ways to learn a skill like winemaking. So a lot of wine drinking goes into that.
And was there some sort of revelation or aha moment 23 years ago when the both of you said, you know what? Let's just do this and make wine.
So we were actually traveling back and forth to Germany. My husband's company was owned by Germans and stayed in an area that looks just like where we live. The rolling hills, steep slopes, vines all over the place. But it wasn't ever, wasn't the trips from Germany. His very best friend, who lives in the Allentown area, was on a honeymoon in Hawaii and sent us wine from Hawaii. And it wasn't pineapple wine, it was white wine. So that wine, together with the trips, were what made me put the link together. And then we had a vineyard consultant look at the farm. So it was actually my idea to start the winery.
And did you realize 23 years ago that you might go from a couple of acres up to 20?
No idea. And we're actually, my husband is sixth generation on the farm. Our daughter is seventh. She's traveled the world, has degrees from Cornell and a university. It's Montpellier in France. So she's been everywhere and finally joined us. So we're about to, it's a big commitment. I like to say we've committed to the future by finally convincing her to stop going from Europe to California to New Zealand and come and join us with her talents. So we're gearing up for another generation, just like a European winery would do.
And that would be the seventh generation farming that land.
Seventh generation on our land, yes.
We hear a lot of stories like that, whether it's people at orchards or other vineyards coming up here and saying that. And I think that's maybe part of the Pennsylvania tradition.
It is.
People who have been here for generations.
And coming back, that was the, you know, we were, after she'd been away for so long, uncertain if she'd ever decide to return to us. And she just did not quite a year ago. So it's very exciting. She's bringing a whole new dimension. Her specialty is wine growing. So she's already, well, I shouldn't say already, she's begun a massive overhaul of our vineyard, fine-tuning, bringing in practices that she's seen from all over the world onto our farm. So that's very exciting.
What sort of things is she doing?
Well, she's changed everything. We prune, so everything is pruned. She has her own methods and thoughts about that. We also hand position all of the vines onto the wires. That needs to be done a certain way. She has a very strong background in sustainable farming. We've always been a sustainable farm, but that's going to be tightened up because she's now another generation. So we need to, you know, use caution in what we do and how we take care of our land so that it's ready for the next one.
For the eighth generation.
Yeah. Oh, my. That could be coming.
Well, it's good that you mentioned your daughter. And you certainly being in here, I know winemaking has traditionally been a male-dominated field, and I'm pleased to see that it's starting to even out a little bit, maybe even more so in this region than other parts of the country. What are your observations?
Well, no, internationally and even nationally, it's about 8 to 9% of the women in the world are winemakers. I think in generations younger than me, that will certainly change. But certainly that's the typical numbers. I've seen numbers lower than that, but I think 8 to 9% is what is an international standard for women winemakers. So it's still definitely a man-dominated industry. Women have a super keen sense of smell and taste. I'm extremely protective of mine. I don't allow people to work for me with any sort of scent on them because I don't use anything scented. And my daughter is trained, although her love and joy is to be outside, she is also trained in sensory evaluation and to a certain extent winemaking. So we'll transition her into that as she's with us longer. Right now she's really intent and focused on the vineyard.
So more women come up as winemakers, we should be getting better quality wines given your sensory, right?
Perhaps. I mean, there's some very talented men as well. But for what our daughter does, it's 1 or 2% of the world that do the wine growing that are women. So she's really in a kind of breakthrough career and situation. I don't think she knows anyone of her own age that does what she does.
I know with other beverages, we've seen a big growth in local small distilleries and certainly craft beer. Are you seeing that same trend with local wines?
There are. There's a bunch of new local wineries that have popped up. And I think Pennsylvania is slowly catching on to embrace local beverages in general, wine, beer, spirits. There's a whole slew of them that have opened in the valley. It's really nice and it's exciting. We can also offer at the winery local beer and local distilled spirits, which is a nice compliment. If you're visiting the winery and, you know, you're not a fan of wine, then we would have something to offer you.
And I know here in June we do have a Lehigh Valley Wine Trail event, and you're doing some special things up at Galen Glen, right?
We are. All of the members are going to offer something special. At our winery, we're featuring Trey Rosé, which is three rosés because rosé is a big hot trend nationally, internationally, especially in summer. In fact, June 9th is National Rosé Day. I know.
How appropriate.
Right? So we're going to offer two new rosés, a bubbly rosé. That's a carbonated rosé, so sparkly, dry, crisp, a rosé made from a single variety. The variety is called Zweigelt, so a Zweigelt rosé. And then the third rosé is one we introduced last year. It's our biggest selling new rosé ever. It's a dry rosé. So all three of these are dry. We'll explain to you how rosé is made because there's a couple different ways to make rosé, so we'll get into the winemaking. And then we're also going to feature a local handmade pasta salad because it's summertime, picnics, rosé, pasta, all sorts of fun. So yeah, Galen, Aaron, and I will help teach people about rosé. There's a lot to know and learn.
Well, it sounds like a lot of fun. Sarah, thank you for joining us here on WDIY.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I'm Mike Drabenstadt, and this is The Inside Dish on Lehigh Valley Art Salon.
Next up on Lehigh Valley Art Salon, At the Movies, a review of a current film with Paul Willistein of the Press.
Spoiler alert, this movie is going to avenge Avengers Infinity War. The hit movie, which broke domestic and international opening weekend movie box office records and continues to sell out screenings, is a bloated, computer-generated imagery mess. The Marvel Cinematic Universe is a very crowded place in Avengers Infinity War, with just about every character known to man in the movie short of Inspector Gadget. Yes, I know he's not part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Directors Anthony Russo and Joe Russo and screenwriters Christopher Marcus and Stephen Feely probably hoped they could get by on the amazing computer special effects, and they are amazing, especially in the 3D format that the movie was seen for this review. If you are going to see Avengers Infinity War, I recommend seeing it in 3D.